This presentation is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. The views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Financial Services, Inc. UBS Financial Services, Inc. does not verify and does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of the information presented. The Winged and Ready guest and UBS Financial Services are not affiliated. I am so excited to be back with Winged and Ready. You guys are my first podcast for the year. We're actually sitting in the Port Washington Public Library today with a founder team that is a husband and wife team, or wife and husband team. I'm not sure who drives who after listening to your own podcast, but we're here with the founders of Señor Lechuga. Did I do a good job pronouncing that?
That's great.
Is that good? Okay. Yeah. It's a hot sauce. Their motto is that it's caliente as bleepity bleepity bleep. I just thought I'd get that out of the right way right now. It rhymes with my dog's name, Buck. We are here today to talk about some of the interesting things about founding a business specific to the food and beverage industry, specific to New York State. And as always, the premise for Winged and Ready, for me especially, is to bring together entrepreneurs and listeners who are looking to grow our local economy nationally and globally. As an advisor, I deal with a lot of business owners, so helping them achieve their personal wealth goals is extremely important. And the best way to achieve your personal wealth goals is to grow your wealth, and that's to grow your business. And you two are a fantastic example of taking something from a passion project into a viable business in a really, really short period of time. Yes, I'm a local girl, and I always talk about New York, and I always talk about Long Island, but the three of us actually met in Los Angeles, out in LA, at a conference, breaking bread together at a lunch table, and the conversation just flowed very organically and cleanly, which I think is also very apropos for your product. So I'm just gonna pause for a second and ask you guys to introduce yourselves.
Hi, I'm Nico Lechuga. I am the co-founder and head of product for Señor Lechuga Hot Sauce. And my partner is?
I'm Lauren Cosenza, and I'm the co-founder and head of brand for Señor Lechuga Hot Sauce.
So Nico and Lauren have very, very different backgrounds, which I think is fascinating. As they have their own podcast as well, which is extremely helpful. I encourage everyone to give that a listen as well. It's called Let Us Rewind. Lechuga means lettuce in Spanish. So I was wondering where the lettuce came from, but that's very clever. Yes. And their own podcast thematically posed what Winged and Ready does, you know, is how they founded their business. And Lauren, I thought it was so interesting. It sounded like you hopped into the business a little bit later. Were you kind of like in a wait and see mode? Like, is he really going to do this?
Well, I wasn't necessarily in a wait and see mode. I was consulting at the time for Bustle, BDG Digital Group. And so I was like fully immersed in that and also pretty pregnant. And had my own company for quite some time. So had no interest in starting something new. And Nico was working in finance. And he turned to me one night on the couch and said, well, we could talk a little bit more about the starting of the sauces. But after getting a lot of feedback, he's turned to me and said, I think I'm going to actually see what it would take to make this idea, which he can talk about, into a business. And I was like, sure, you know, go for that. And he was like, I think it'd be really cool to do it on the side. I mean, I don't think he had really any plans at the time either of making it a full time job for himself, and certainly not a full-time thing for the two of us. And so I really was more like, well, have you thought about your brand? Have you thought about your website, your voice, the colors you'd like to use, fonts? Like, how do you envision the brand? What's the vibe of the brand? And I started asking some questions, and he was like, no, I haven't thought of any of that, because you'll do that. You know, that's your thing. And so he sort of wrote me in, and even very pregnant, I also went to the first production. I'm, you know, picking stems off of peppers and getting blisters on my hand, hot filling bottles. And so I was more supporting him and doing this passion project. And as the momentum grew for it, and then when we had the baby, the momentum spiked, and I also, there was just so much opportunity, and it was also fun for me because it wasn't that different than beauty and beauty and fashion, just the way I was shooting it, the way we did our brand book, and just all the creative assets. It was like fun, and so the ability to be able to work with him while we had this new baby was like a beautiful thing for us as a family. And so it, as it continued, from the beginning we did it together, but I really thought of it as Nico's thing. Food was never a category that I don't even cook.
You know, what's interesting though is your business background appeals to the senses.
Right.
And clearly taste
right.
is a,
color,
one of
texture,
the more
yes.
important senses that we have.
Yes.
So I could see how that would be such a natural fit for you.
And visually, like to see the texture in the Instagram photos or on our website, or to see the color variation with the different peppers batch to batch, season to season. So that's sort of how I got brought in. But yes, it was originally Nico was making these sauces and people were loving them. And so
Nico, he has a background in private equity. So interesting that you took a pivot and did something to build your own brand and to start your own consumer product goods specific to hot sauces. Tell me a little bit more, what was the pivot or the aha moment when you went from taking something as a hobby and doing, you know, local ingredients from your grocery store to, you know, digging into the certifications and the production and the testing and because it's been, how long has it been?
About 2.5 years.
2.5 years. Yeah. And, you know, for the listeners out there, go check out their website, SeniorLechuga.com. Look at their story. I mean, we're talking, there's a Game of Thrones hot sauce. You guys have collaborated with Danny Myers, correct, for a taco. I mean, this has been like 2.5 years of like rocket launch, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Tell me, when was your aha moment? And clearly you got it right. So how does one replicate that?
For us, I feel like it was more of like a pain point. A lot of business, I feel like, is founded out of personal pain point. And this was almost accidental in the way that we couldn't find a hot sauce, or I couldn't find a hot sauce that had both heat and flavor. There's a lot of hot sauces that have a ton of flavor, and there's a lot that have a lot of heat and are very gimmicky. And so,
in that you can't taste any
flavor
because there's so much heat.
So much heat.
It becomes something that you're going to like share with a bunch of guys, and you're going to see who can actually take it. But it's not something that you're going to consistently eat.
Which we regularly do at my dinner table.
Yeah.
It's a novelty. It's fun.
There's
but it wasn't what
that.
He was looking for.
Yeah.
So I would say originally it was, I started experimenting in the kitchen and we had made these hot sauces and I kept hearing like, if you'd make this, I'd buy it from various different other sources. And I was like, I'm just going to jump into this and see what it actually takes. I figured that I had a little bit of extra time that I could devote, as I found a kitchen that was open 24 hours a day in Brooklyn. Cool thing of being in New York, there's so many different resources for you to be able to use, especially in a food community. And I got a discount on the hours if I did the hours outside of, I think, 7 p.m. and before 6 in the morning. So I would go a couple times a month from like 8 p.m. to 2 o'clock in the morning, and we would make hot sauce after we figured out the regulations and everything. But to this moment, I think within a couple months of us founding the business, our sales online went from about 95.5 men to women to 90.10 women to men.
Wow.
And it's nice that we were able to just track that and see what was happening. But we'd gotten a Cosmo Holiday gift guide, and then we'd been put in Martha Stewart, and then we got every like Fairway Market while it was still in existence in this area.
In the same week that we had a child, that happened. We came home from the hospital, and a few days later, Nico's like, all the orders that are coming in are female names. It's really interesting. And he said, do you think the Cosmo thing went live? Because we knew that they had asked us for products. Some of the editors had come over and seen us while we were pregnant, who I had known, for the beauty editors.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, this, like, as he had heard over and over again, if you sold this, you know, people would buy it. This is amazing. We're going to give it to our food editors. Maybe they'll put it in this gift guide. But we didn't really think that might happen. You know, Cosmo said, I think at the time it was like 19 million unique visitors. You know, we thought nothing of it. And then we had the baby and all the names switched, and Nico thought maybe that had happened. And he was correct.
You have like this hockey stick type moment, and that it just kept metastasizing from there. We kept getting really, really good feedback, I would say, from like established people within food. I don't have a food background. Lauren doesn't have a food background. It's a pure passion. Like, we do make and create everything ourselves from the recipe. Now we have other production houses like making the product at scale, but the original recipe formatting for everything
and all the research and development, everything
is done ourselves.
Nico,
It's very, very cool.
I'm a
cool
great taster.
Not
a great formulator.
It's great though, because it's at a certain, there's a period of time where Lauren like wasn't feeling that well, I would say for a week, and we were working on, just a quick digression, this collaborative sauce with this very established chef out of Panama, and he was having his first iteration of restaurants in the United States, and he wanted us to do the hot sauce for them, and they'll actually be opening in DC next month. It's called
Cafe Unido.
Yeah, so Lauren wasn't feeling well, so didn't want to try the hot sauce for that week. And I think I made like 7 iterations of it. And I took it to the Shake Shack team actually first and had like their entire culinary team taste it. And they were like, this is the one. And then Lauren finally tasted it and agreed with that. I'm like, all right, that's what we're going
I'm certain. I don't know how to get it there, but when something's off, I'm like, it's not 100%. Yeah. It's really good. It's not 100%. And then he'll make a tweak, and when it's there, I'm like, this is it. And then, you know, usually that's backed by people who know what they're talking about in food. So I have a pretty good record of kind of understanding when it's great, but not how to get it great. And so thankfully, Nico has grown and had an existing knowledge base of just how ingredients play together. I just think instinctually, Nico always has loved food and grew up with a lot of different flavors in his household and gets it. He gets it right.
Well, you guys have such an interesting collaboration. I mean, not only using different senses, but you have each other as sounding boards. I mean, if you were to envision doing this by yourself without each other as a sounding board, how would that, somebody who's an entrepreneur and has an idea and doesn't have a partner that they can rely on now, you know, what resources do you think that they would need? You guys clearly are, you know, the two ingredients that work very well for your sauce.
I think like with this, I think that's a great question and really like great point. And I think like I really agree with like Ray Dalio on this, and like knowing what you do well and knowing what you don't do well and like being able to recognize that and compensate for that. So for me, I would say pricing out a new product and figuring out like, is this economically viable? Does it taste good? Whatever else, that's like my core competency. I can do that very, very well. If we're talking about branding something, putting a voice behind it, giving it this other touch, that's not my background and that's not something even with more exposure that my brain is gonna work with really, really well, and understanding that, okay, then that goes to Lauren and that becomes point.
Yeah. And if you don't have a partner to do it with who has like a complementary skill set, then I think you would outsource those things. Like he would probably have brought in a designer. I mean, I originally recommended some people to do some work for us, and then he was like, I think you could do it, and I did it. And so I'm not a photographer, right, obviously by trade, but I know enough about photography from shoots I've been on and lighting, and I have some stuff at home, you know, accessories, camera accessories, that enable us to get the look we're going for at no cost. So, you know, without a budget at all. In the beginning, we really were very careful about spending money. And then over time, I was like, well, what about this person? What about that person? And when it is important, like we work with a food photographer, when we really need something shot for Amazon, for example, there were specific specs for the files. And so we use someone and we bring people in. So I think if we didn't have each other, I wouldn't be in the business of food, because you need a product to start with. But I think if Nico didn't have me, he would have to then bring in talent to supplement what he's really good at.
And we're like even very honest about that right now. Like we have I would say a decent sized program that's on the table for 2020. And we don't have, I would say, tremendous experience with ad buying. And an ad buying component might be a multi-channel ad buying component might be a key component of that program. And so we brought in an expert. And I think this goes back to the main question of finding those people within your network that are those experts and just starting to talk to as many of them as possible and learning, like being open to learn as much as possible, asking relevant questions, and then building your knowledge base and empowering.
And that expert was someone my first job out of college was at McCann Erickson, and she worked there in the media strategy and buying department. So she's been doing that her whole career and is an expert at that. That just made me think of is also putting it out, not just talking to your network, like reaching out to people directly, but I threw something up on Facebook and said, hey, Nico's doing this sauce and it's really awesome, but I don't really know anyone who's, you know, in the food space. Do I know any food editors? Do I know any people that like, you know, any chef? Like I'm blanking, but maybe some of you are out there.
Right.
And people reached out to me, and one of them was my assistant when I was at Cosmo. I hired her out of college. She was a rock star. She was currently at the time, she even just got promoted, but she was the SVP of sales and marketing for Murray's, who's now a core partner of ours. She just got promoted to chief strategy officer of Murray's Cheese. And we ended up not only reconnecting, we had stayed in touch over the years, but we really got reconnected in a closer way. She has been integral in our partnership with Murray's and connecting us with their team. And she also said, similar to the beauty editors, that I can't guarantee anything, but I can pass this along and see if people like it. And then right away, we got like all 12 of the 12 people who tested it love it. So things like that, I think, tapping into even your social networks.
I think that's a really good point. I try to encourage listeners all the time, just because you talk to somebody doesn't necessarily mean it's a service that you're then going to have to pay for. Legal advice, for example, if somebody has an app or something technological that they're trying to develop, they can talk to an IP attorney on the phone. It doesn't necessarily mean that they then are going to be cornering themselves into hiring an IP attorney.
Right.
But I think there's so many professionals out there within our networks that you can access and have, you know, talk to them for 15, 30 minutes and get loads of free advice that steers you in the right direction. And knowing what you don't know and what your core competencies are critical to being able to broaden your network. And, you know, connectivity between people and our knowledge base, you know, like our collective knowledge hive, if you will,
right,
is really how we all achieve better outcomes. So I think that's interesting.
I think it goes back too to like how we met, of the just belief that you don't have to be paying for these knowledge bases. Like people are that have done well or decently intelligent are very curious about other people's businesses too, and are naturally more inclined to want to talk about those things and offer potentially solutions without having anything come back to them, either because they're paying it forward or because they've just been incredibly, I would say, generous over the course of their career. We've been good to other people too in the other
way. I was just gonna say that I think it's you pay it forward, but then it gets paid back in different ways. Like I think we've been good to people in our careers, and like people have rooted for us, and like people have come out of the woodwork to tell us, I have someone I want to introduce you to, or I have someone to connect you with, or I have an opportunity for you, or I have an idea for you. Or so, in so many ways we've been like really almost like wowed and humbled a little bit, like that people have not only rooted for us but tried to be launch pads for us to get to even the next level. That's been very nice.
That's really encouraging to hear, especially on a Friday as we're all going into our weekends on what's been a very volatile time period for the listeners. We are recording today on Friday, February 28th, so anybody who's been paying attention to the stock markets and to the virus, it's been a negative week. Yeah. To say the least. So it's nice to hear something positive. And really, I want to bring that back around to volatility in a weird way, because when you think about it, you know, people and communication and doing the right thing really dampens volatility across the board, whether it's in your personal life or in your business or even ultimately in the markets. It all rebounds being back to the right place where it should be. So you guys have been generous to some of your supporters. Talk about that, you know, that serendipity angle a little bit. Where do you see it coming back around full circle?
To us or to other people?
Both.
I would say that we had this kitchen that we were cooking out of originally. It was actually in the old Pfizer building. And they started expanding the holding company that owned that kitchen pretty rapidly, and it was a bad situation, and the kitchen ended up failing, and it put 3,500 I think businesses out of a home overnight.
Wow.
And immediately, like the support from New York State was incredible, of just waiving certain requirements that would normally have to be there for you to get in another kitchen, waiving fees, helping like give you a line to help out with. And then also too, for the people that were at that company that didn't see what was happening and like lost their jobs. So we were fortunate enough to have already hedged out of that position, but other people weren't so much. And I think that from offering other people, I think like roles that we saw come up and recommending them to
opportunities. I think even people email us all the time with like very specific questions, and we're not always able to get back to them right away, but we get back to people with detailed answers, and we really try very hard to help people in ways that with things we wish we had known.
Yeah.
I also think just when I was at Bustle, I worked with different departments, a lot with sales and marketing and design, and one of the marketers had left Bustle and started a job at a company called Bespoke Post, and she reached out to us and said, hey, we're doing this do-it-yourself hot sauce kit, and we're looking for a maker that we would use the product. It would be a dried product, and then people could make hot sauce from it, and we would do a video on the makers. And so she recommended us, and they chose us, and we worked with them, and that partnership has only grown and grown. And that was literally because I was consulting and mentoring a group of people and connected with these, you know, individual, mostly women at the company. And So I do think that when you are, you know, just being yourself, but caring for others and trying to help grow and protect and, you know, do good for others, it does come back in all sorts of different ways. Yeah. I mean, that was like an unexpected partnership, and it's grown so nicely for us.
Being conscientious, right?
Yeah.
And keeping your eyes and your ears open.
And not with the intent of return, just
right.
for the sake of it's the right thing. I mean, our company, we have principles, and that was really important for us to just like nail down our company principles. And that's part of it, you know, is like doing the right thing, you know, whether people know or not, you know, that's like super important, and just like work ethic. And
I have a couple of follow-on questions. One of them, I want to come back to your company principles, but Nico, you had mentioned New York State being supportive, and back to the beginning of this podcast, mm-hmm. one of the things that I'm always talking to entrepreneurs about is to look at New York State and see where funding can come from. Have you had any other surprises that were at the state level?
I would say that other than the initial visit in the food and with the regulators, which was a little bit, I would say, rocky, and that's probably just because it wasn't my background and it was the first ever time dealing with them. They were actually incredibly helpful and open to just asking questions. And I think in a food space, especially starting a new food company, having that resource and being able to reach out is pretty great. I think at a other level, there's New York's pretty amazing for startup businesses, and the resources and the stamps that people are willing to say, like, made in New York, that community that's created there to help you to answer questions, to help out with growth, and to give you resources of individuals that have accomplished something that you're probably looking to do. I think it's pretty great, and I think it would be hard to find outside of a major city.
Yeah,
I'm sure other major cities have similar things. I can't really speak to it right now, but
do you think technology helps bridge any of those gaps for people who may be more rural versus urban in their location?
So Lauren, I think, has done better with like using social media and technology than me. And as a bridge, I think that there's a hard to substitute being in front of somebody if it's an important meeting and an important enough conversation. Like, when we were in California and we met the week after, we were staying there for another 2 weeks, and we had a meeting that we could have done over the phone in New York, but we felt like it was important enough to be in front of the person, so we flew back for 13 hours.
Which was a good time.
So I think that there's things that...
But the meeting was great.
Yeah, you can bridge with technology, but you're definitely going to get a little bit more friction.
I cannot agree with you anymore. I think that there's something in the nuance, right? Being face-to-face with people, and there's just an understanding that you can garner that you can't otherwise get if you're just looking for an answer or a solution by Googling it or going straight to online. Even in my line of work, where people are like, oh, well, I can DIY my investments or my finance. I'm like, look, if you reach a certain point in your wealth, you have gone through an inflection point, right? You're almost like done bootstrapping your own personal wealth, and you're not necessarily worried about making it anymore. You're worried about missing out. And you need a team of people who understand that. And they understand what's important to you. They understand what's important to your family.
Yeah.
And if there isn't a human being that understands what your longer term goals are, then you're not going to find the right solutions.
Right.
And you guys believe in that full circle. So
we're huge relationship people.
Yeah.
So not only just the face-to-face connections, but also just growing relationships over time. So we don't want to work with people and have a lot of one-offs. We really want to like meet people, vibe with them. If it's the right fit, then we want to build growing, lasting, awesome relationships with them. And also, one of the things I was going to say is, with New York, a lot of people think New Yorkers are standoffish, but how we got the Danny Meyer's Tacocina partnership that turned into the Shake Shack Game of Thrones partnership, which turned into the most recent Shake Shack partnership, which continues to grow and be so exciting for us, is that Nico went and dropped off hot sauce while I was taking a SoulCycle class in Williamsburg to the GM and head chef of Tacocina, and had a conversation with her in person, and she was interested in the sauce, and he told her a little bit about the backstory, and she was fully, you know, open to trying the product, And then he gave her, I think, not a business card. I don't even think we had business cards at the time. I think you gave her like a sales sheet.
Yeah.
Like a one-sheeter. We had like a one-sheeter that we like, you know, did a keynote. You'd
probably be embarrassed at this point.
Yeah, it was like a keynote, you know, bullet points, but and some visual imagery. But she lost that and then found us on our website through the Contact Us page and reached out. And we did a one-weekend collaboration with them. We shot it. It was beautiful. It was for Labor Day weekend. We both promoted it. It was super successful. And then they came back to us and said, okay, people really love this. It was super successful. We both supported it really well. And we wanted it to be a permanent menu item, and it remains one. So things like that. And then through that, Nico met John Karangis from Shake Shack. And you could talk about that better than I. But really, that personal connection, that personal interaction.
I think there's certain industries that are they're epicenters for them. I think like finance in New York is very, very hard to beat unless you're maybe in like a London or you're doing venture capital in San Francisco. It's just like it's very, very hard to beat for that. I think food is another one of those where there is, it's almost like a gem to have on a chef's belt per se, right? Of I have a New York restaurant or I have New York experience and then everything else like branches out from there. Are there not great restaurants in all these other major cities? Of course, but New York is just this epicenter, and having the ability, I would say, like when we were doing the collaboration with Shake Shack for Game of Thrones, being able to immediately, within 20 to 30 minutes, like go to that kitchen, drop something off, talk to them, go through that, is just you can't beat that. And yeah, for right now, for where we're at in our business, like that's incredibly valuable.
Tell me about that moment when you left from after your first, you know, test kitchen experience at Shake Shack. What was that like? Were you thinking and feeling? And
yeah, it's a great question. So John Karangis used to be the executive chef of Unisquare Hospitality Events. So he would do everything from like a 10-person, you want a white tablecloth dinner, to I think his biggest that he ever did was like 75,000 people. And just this insane, insane chef. So then he moved over to Shake Shack, separate company now, public company, and became the first ever executive chef. And funny enough, like when we did the Tacosino thing, unbeknownst to us, he was actually somewhat in charge of that menu creation. And he started following us on Instagram, and I turned to Lauren. I was like, this is a pretty cool chef.
Look at this guy that's following us. Like, look what he's doing. Look at this. Like, he had like a stuffed rigatoni, like close-up shot, and you know.
He turned it on its side, and he had stuffed it, and it was like an appetizer, and he was serving all this cool stuff
this guy's doing. Like, should we reach out to him? Like, he started following us, and he knows some people, you know, like other accounts that we are connected with.
So I DM'd him and said, if you ever want any hot sauce, like, more than happy to supply it. And he said, I've already had it. It's great. I'm actually leaving and starting a new job, but I'd love to find a way if we could work together there. So we met.
And we didn't know what that was.
Yeah. I should probably Google that. So picked it up and had Shake Shack.
Yeah, over time, he's like, I think he's going over to be the top chef at like running innovation and stuff.
So we met for coffee after a number of months of him just getting acclimated to that atmosphere. And it was really, really cool because it was... we have nothing but incredible things to say about like the enterprises that Danny Meyer's built, and I think that's a testament to his people and the processes that he's created within his organization. Everything from how they create their products to how the staff treats their customers and one another is just, I mean, it's something that when
the passion they have for their brands,
you see it, you want to be a part of it. So I think you're walking
infectious.
Across. Yeah.
In a good way.
Correct.
Unbelievable. Yeah. In an absolute unbelievable way. And it's incredible to see like a public company be able to do that. And so after walking away from, I guess, that initial meeting, I was like, that was very, very cool. We didn't think anything was going to come of it, at least initially. They do a lot of testing out of the innovation kitchen, and they book pretty far out, and it has to go through a lot of different rounds before they agree to even do something where they're promoting it in the test kitchen. And I was like, but if nothing more back to the other conversation we were having, like, that's a great contact, and I'm so happy to have like crossed paths with like this.
Right, like good vibes, good food, good people, good work. Like that's what we're always like.
See,
if that's all it
food.
Is, that's enough. Like
yeah, that's totally fine.
Stomach's
gonna
start
yeah.
Yeah.
So, but then
yeah,
that didn't happen.
We got a. I would say 4 weeks later, I got a call from him at like 8 o'clock in the morning. We were in Texas for another event, and he said, can you jump on the phone? And he was on the phone with Mark Rosati, who's the head of culinary for Shake Shack, who's one of the coolest, if you like food, he has one of the coolest jobs in food. He travels around the world and gets to try everything and just bring back the best flavors and see what they can use.
Not a bad gig.
Unbelievable. So everything from like street vendors in Thailand to like eating at Noma. It's pretty cool. So they were asking about volume questions and what we could supply and what we had on hand. And then they said they were going to do something, I think it was in April at that time period. And I remember we got off the phone, I turned to Lauren, and I was like, we look something up. And I was like, and they said they were doing a Fiery Shack sauce. I said, Game of Thrones is launching.
Entertainment was mentioned in the call.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of clues. So I don't think we had like an aha moment, but like it was like little clues were dropped.
Yeah.
And we were like, we think this is going to be like an exclusive limited edition partnership that's like officially, there was a lot of Game of Thrones inspired items that were, you know, for sale around that time, but this was like an HBO partnership with Shake Shack, and we were brought in to be the fire for the fiery sauce.
We got a super heavy-handed NDA before like anything.
Yeah,
like,
but so I think it was clues, little by little,
and then
they confirmed it. But when we were in the kitchen, that was after everything was signed, done deal, and we went, the three of us, the baby and Nico and myself, to the Innovation Kitchen, and it's like down the basement in the West Village, and they prepared the burger for us, and Javi, who is our son, wanted to taste it. Now it has our number two sauce in it, or the 00, the .002, the Chipotle, so it has Reapers in it. So we're like, I don't know, no, not for you, you know, and they cut him up a little orange or something, and he really wanted this burger, and we were eating this burger, and it was delicious. And so finally we gave him like a tiny, you know, like put it to his mouth, tiny little taste. And he was like, ooh, hot. And that was, you know, so we all got to taste it. And the very next day it was in Madison Square Park. It was a secret and they had a menu in Valyrian. So people had to order it in the language from Game of Thrones. We could not talk about it until it went viral with, you know, someone breaking the news and the other outlets covering it. And then once it was out, we could talk about it. And then, what we couldn't say was that the following week, it was going to go national, this shack, and then it select top cities, the burger as well. It was like a fire and ice theme. And as that press started to roll out, it was insane the amount of press that it garnered within like 24 hours from the first person to break it to the end of the day and then the end of the week. And so we just kept on getting people, you know, reaching out to us. And
that's amazing. I mean, how cool is it that you were asked to bring the fire? I mean, literally, the fire.
Nothing else spicy in the burger.
Unbelievable. I think like that to us was like a testament to what's probably made Shake Shack successful, and that these willingness to take risks. Because if you're thinking about it from that standpoint, or me putting on like a finance hat on the other side, that the risk from that of you using a small New York-based company at that time period for what's going to be your biggest collaboration ever for a public company.
It ended up being their most successful to date.
In your biggest cities, like that seems like a lot of risk.
Yeah.
Across like different things, but they were willing to take that risk for the product, and the product tripled.
And to support us, they had us come when they brought one of the thrones to the location, and they had us come with our baby and take pictures on the throne and really be a part of all the media. From Soup to Nuts, like that is a company that does things right, and their people are chanting, you know, Shack, 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 everybody. And everyone's like super pumped and excited, and that again, like it reconfirms over and over again for us that we want to work with people who are like-minded, who are passionate, who have, you know, integrity and mutual respect, and want to dream big and are interested in exciting innovation and things like that.
There are so many themes that I keep hearing being repeated between, and by the way, I wish everyone that was listening to this could see how cute you guys are. We look at each other during conversation. So adorable. But the philosophy, the process, the people, those of us who have, you know, our finance hats are used to thinking about those kinds of things. But it seems like it's just organically embedded in what you do. And you talked a few minutes ago about principles. So I'd love to just hear a little bit about your principles and how that makes you unique, how you're your own risk takers. And then I would love to close out with, you know, a mistake that you've learned from.
So I think that for us, it's really in the same way that Lauren put together our brand book and like the brand voice and colors, which are really incredible. They're visual guiding guidelines. Yeah, they're visual guiding principles in their own way. Us having company principles of like grit, integrity, communication,
leading from the front, innovation.
Yeah, those things help us guide projects that we're looking at to the point where,
and partnerships, who we will and won't partner with, what's the right brand fit for us.
How we even do things. Like we've up until this point as a company, we've made a choice to not do things like many other food companies would. And that's intentional. We think that like in order to really do something well and to eventually make a lot of money doing it, you have to be almost contrarian in your thinking. Mm. When others aren't taking risk, you have to take risk. When others are doing like, and our son loves the movie Cars, but this like saying of turning right to go left seems like completely backwards, but for us fits so well. And it's good to see these principles as like a guideline for us as we operate our company.
They also help us with efficiency and decision making. So oftentimes if we're tasked with a decision, we can just, you know, does it align with our principles? One, but two, we prioritize our principles. So if something is, you know, supports one but not another, then we go with the higher level principle. So the things that are the most important to us lead. And so that helps us not really spend a lot of time going back and forth on decisions. So.
Yeah, that's super important. I mean, really your principles allow you to take your risks because you know when to either move on or that it's so right that you should just take a step that maybe other people otherwise wouldn't.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's definitely 100% right, yeah.
And then you can lead with mistakes.
I'm trying to think, like, what's a...
I have one that's, speak to broadly, not specifically, but it's more about following your gut. We had an opportunity with a big brand to do something, and we were referred by someone who kind of told us some things about this organization that weren't so great, but that, you know, we might need this organization to move forward. And so we had conversations with them and we really wanted to have a contract with them and like loop it up as fast as possible to, you know, to move forward with something that we were interested in. I know this is kind of vague, but the point is we got a little bit of a funny gut feeling about the way the interaction went and the way that the business was conducted and the way that timeliness with responses. And we just kept on thinking, well, if we need this to move forward, we should pursue it. And so we did, and ultimately it wasn't what we wanted. We knew that they weren't people who are of the same, they did not share the same principles as us. And the people who referred them to us kind of warned us about this, but felt it might be a necessary means to an end because in this industry, people do things the same exact way. What we should have thought about was one of our principles is not doing things the same exact way. You don't know what you don't know. So we are listening to people with gut, you know, with expertise. But really, it should have been clear to us that we don't have to follow these rules. We shouldn't work with people when we get a gut instinct about them that maybe they're not bad people, but they're not the right partners for us. It wasn't the right fit. And I think moving forward in that, thankfully, that was earlier on in the business. And now we never make that mistake. When we get a bad vibe or we get a bad feeling or we just think, like, these are awesome people, but there's just not the right synergies or for what we're trying to do, it won't be successful on both sides. We say, like, you know, it was awesome to me, and maybe in the future something will work out, but right now we're cool doing, you know, our own thing. And I think that gives us the confidence of knowing, like, not a great introduction to someone who might be great or doing great things doesn't mean you have to work together, and that's fine.
It's okay to say no.
Yeah, but we did make that mistake, and it took some time to sort of, like, reverse course that.
Yeah, and figure out how to move out of it.
Right.
Right, so... It's all a game, and having those pieces or understanding the correct moves, especially as a startup, you only have so many moves that you are able to make, and that was key.
Yeah, we also had a situation in which we were relying on a third-party manufacturer, and they advised us that we would need a certain amount of product to complete an order, and their machinery, we were working with film, and that was new for their machinery, and there was an error that had occurred on their end. And we were unable to meet part of the deadline. We were able to fulfill part of an order, but not all of it, with a new partner, which was pretty mortifying to us because we're very, you know, we want to over-deliver always.
Of course.
The brand, we were very transparent with them. They were very understanding. We ended up turning it around very quickly, and it worked out. But that was a really good learning for us as well, that we trust other people to give us information when it's areas that we don't know about. But we really should always be, like, over-cautious with the overages for the runs and... you know, just in doing production in general. This had a very specific timeline, and they came to us a little bit late in the game, but if we talked about repeating the process for the following year, we're going to start a little bit earlier. So, you know, just mistakes aren't the end of the world, but if you don't learn from them, then, you know, you haven't evolved as a brand. So we try to evolve and learn as much as we can through our successes and failures.
And I think, with those mistakes, manufacturing, every single time that you're doing it is iterative. You're going to get better and better at figuring out what's the actual yield that you're coming out with of what you need. And for us, with those things, having the right contingencies in place, which even thankfully, we did, of margin product overages can save the business. And we've been good about that. This is one particular case where
we were reliant. It was a new product and it wasn't sauce, and so we were reliant on a manufacturer. I mean, we're control freaks about our parts of the business, and so when we need to outsource, we physically have to. We're both sometimes pretty nervous about, I wouldn't say nervous, but we're very hands-on, you know. And so when something happens that's out of your control, but it's your brand and your reputation and your relationships, the first instinct is uh-oh, you know. And then we realize, okay, well, we're humans and mistakes happen, and, you know, this in business, sometimes your things will happen that are out of your control. And so how do we just course correct immediately? And what are the best things that we can do to, you know, manage that relationship best? And so I think we just are very quick to, if we don't have control and something happens when it's out of our control, we don't blame the other party, we don't, you know, say anything bad about, you know, it wasn't our fault and things like that. We just say, okay, here we are now, and what can we do from starting now to correct this and move forward and grow?
Wow. I mean, it's a lot of information that we've packed in 40 short minutes. And Laura and Nico, I cannot thank you guys enough for coming over to Port Washington and sitting in our beautiful public library
here.
It is beautiful. I have to give them a little bit of a prop. I wish you continued success, and I can't wait to watch you grow. And all the listeners out there, again, they have their own website and they have their own podcasts, which is chock full of information. So think of this one as just scratching the surface. And, you know, one of the things I really want to end on, because I think it's so important, is, you know, the going with your gut and finding the right fit and trusting that, I think is something that is critical. And as an advisor, I tell so many people that your financial advice doesn't have to be rocket science, but just put something in place that you trust, so that when you have weeks like this week, you don't fiddle with it.
Right.
Because that's really where you get your long-term successes, is knowing where you feel comfortable. And it's important to make sure you put the parameters, the principles, and the processes and the team in place for you, so that you feel comfortable and you stick with your long-term horizons. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
This was great.
Yeah.
Really
thank you so
thank
much
you.
For having us.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business and that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, visit our website at UBS.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.